The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Monday, the 1st of October, 2018. It's a new week, a new day, a new quarter. On the podcast today, I have David Sefton, Executive Chairman of Anglo African Oil and Gas. AAOG is ticker there, and David provides an operational update at the Tilapia field in the Republic of Congo. Also on the podcast, Kieran Mazaria, Chief Executive Officer of Cadence, KDNC. And Kieran discusses the lithium market and also gives an update on one of his investments, European Metal Holdings. Plus, Emma Priestley, Chief Executive Officer of Goldstone Resources, GRL. Emma provides an operational update from their gold projects in the Ashanti region of Ghana. And as always, I have a list of the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and also the top five most liked RNSs. By the way, you can see the top 10 of both these lists on the front page at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Want to keep up to date with all the companies in your portfolio? On the free Vox Markets app, you can create multiple watch lists and get instant news alerts about any company you follow. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is David Sefton, Executive Chairman of Anglo African Oil and Gas. AAOG is the ticker there. David, thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Justin. Good to talk.
Yeah, and you're currently very busy at the moment, of course, carrying out a respud, reschedule. We'll get into the detail of that in a bit. Before we do, David, for people who are listening right now, not familiar with the company, what is Anglo African Oil and Gas all about, please?
Well, it's a small listed E&P company with a sole asset at the moment, which is Tilapia Field in the Republic of Congo, which is the nice cougar. Usually, we are currently already a producing oil company. We have small production from two existing wells. And key thing about AAOG is that we are just about to drill a new well. And this is... it's an interesting one because it's not only going through the existing producing horizon, but from which we might add a few hundred barrels a day, but going then into a second horizon called the Mango Sands, from which we have well test data showing producible hydrocarbons. And Mango wells into the Mango generally come on about, say, 800, 900 barrels a day and then decline down and stabilize at 400 to 500 barrels a day. Mm-hmm. But then, more interestingly, we've got a third target, which is the Geno, which is a horizon where the structure is in our license area, but the surrounding producers, Total, Eni, etc., are getting 5,000 barrels a day per well. Now, that's pure exploration, but and you never really know until you get the pipe down there. But it's that nice mixture of existing production underwriting, existing production and discovered reserves, mm-hmm. proven reserves, underwriting some interesting exploration upside.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, start of September, you had a couple of issues, experienced some what's called a topside issue that affected the rig. So you've moved the rig and you're respudding. So how is the preparation going for that respud, David?
Well, it's gone very well, frankly. We most recently said we hope to be spudding the week of the 8th of October, and that is going to be the case. At the moment, we just released some photos on Twitter this morning showing where things are. We have finished ahead of time getting the pad in place. We got the new conductor, managed to get that into country at time, and that's currently being hammered in. It's been hammered into 80 metres, and it looks like we're going to continue down hammering it to about 120 metres. Mm. The key thing about that is that provides much greater rigidity and ability to withstand pressure at the uppermost layers of the well. So one of the key factors in ensuring that we don't hit the same problem next time, or if we do hit the same geological issue next time, it won't cause a problem for the well. Everything else is on site. We're looking to rig up during the course of this week. James Berwick is already on a plane as we speak now down to the Congo. I'm heading down at the end of the week, and we are all on schedule for a respud during the course of next week.
Marvellous stuff. And you mentioned in the interims about the new licence process. How's that progressing?
It's progressing very well. I mean, the The DGH has to be very clear that that the new license for tilapia is just dependent upon the work program for 103, and we've been getting on with that. So there's a meeting tomorrow, James, with the DGH and also SNPC, and we're pushing for sort of quick progress on that. It has also helped, although it's not a gating factor or requirement, but there are other license areas in within the Congo that the government's quite keen that we look at, and we're sort of assessing those for the opportunities that they present. So you know, in parallel with the drilling, we are looking to make good progress with the license. I don't think it'll get done and dusted this week, but it's clearly very much back on track with their approval of all the work that we've been doing down on site, and finally getting on with getting this field properly into production.
Marvellous stuff. Okay, so in summary, David, give us those three bullet points. If someone's listening, likes the sound of this, but are not yet following the story, give them those three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Yeah, of course. Well, first and foremost is the one I sort of alluded to at the beginning, which is this is a very unusual mix of the kind of exploration, extremely high impact exploration upside through the Geno, while having, unusually for a small E&P company, a backstop of existing production and also proven reserves, which means that everything isn't just a binary roll of the dice on the exploration side. And that exploration is sufficiently compelling that we would take more than one go at it. Secondly, we're about to start drilling this well next week, and it is always interesting to watch and follow a company through a well program. And then thirdly, if you look at the skill sets and experience of the management team, I think it's one of the better placed ones, very clearly aligned with shareholders and with a lot of experience of building up oil companies in Africa.
Mm-hmm. Marvellous stuff. David, thanks for the call, and hopefully we'll be catching up again in the not too distant future. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks, Justin. Thanks very much indeed. Bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Kieran Mazaria, Chief Executive Officer of Cadence. That's KDNC. Kieran, thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Justin.
Now, we haven't spoken for a while, and it's always good to get an update. And there are, you know, brand new people tuning in, and there are people unfamiliar with the company. So, in a small sort of sub-1-minute summary, explain, what is Cadence all about, please?
Well, Cadence is an investment company. We've been investing in the strategic minerals and metals sector. That sector is the metals and minerals that will power the electric vehicle revolution and power storage revolution. So we principally invest in the lithium stock market with our two major investments, Bacanora and European Metals Holdings. But we've more recently, for the last sort of 10, 11 months, started to go into the private side, or private equity style investment. So we made that first investment in San Luis November last year, and that's progressing well. So we're effectively, if you want exposure to the lithium market as a whole and the EV revolution and the minerals that power them, we're the guys to go to.
Excellent stuff. Yes, very hot market, lithium, of course, future to power all that future sort of generation clean energy. Okay, let's go into three things we need to talk about, really. So one of your investees, European Metal Holdings, they had an announcement out today. Take us through that, and what's the significance of that, please, Kieran?
Well, the significance of it is, I suppose, there's really two aspects. And the first one is, of course, that they are doing a PFS on the lithium hydroxide. This is a pre-feasibility study. Lithium hydroxide is a compound utilized in electric vehicles primarily, and they previously did it on lithium carbonate. Now, why are they doing it on lithium hydroxide? Well, in essence, lithium hydroxide has a premium of $1,000 to $2,000 per ton above the price of lithium carbonate. So there's a possible advantage on the NPV and profitability by doing that. Now, of course, there could be some additional costs, but hopefully it's not $2,000 worth of additional costs. So it's a really important aspect of it, because lithium hydroxide has a premium. Two, it's utilized in high performance batteries. So for example, the batteries that you see in Tesla vehicles use lithium hydroxide rather than lithium carbonate, because it provides the right types of power ratio and, in particular, acceleration. So it's really useful in that regard. So, you know, and there's been anticipated more and more use of lithium hydroxide as you want to get to more higher performance batteries within the electric vehicle sector. So this allows them the optionality of, let's see what we end up with lithium hydroxide. How does that improve it? Where's the market going to be? And on lithium carbonate, which they've already done, and that had an NPV of 540 million. So they're embarking on that, and it'd be great to see those results. So, you know, I think they've said that that'll be, you know, ready in the next couple of months. Mm-hmm. Now, the second point of the EMH regulatory new service announcement is that it's got these permits. It's got these permits. It's been quietly getting away these permits for the DFS resource drilling, and it's done the geotechnical drilling for the portal because it's going to be a large underground lithium mine in the Czech Republic. And why is that important? Well, unfortunately, you know, sort of during the last year, you know, it's been used as a bit of political football within the Czech Republic during some elections. So this is showing that actually that's passed. Well, certainly that's my belief, it's passed, because they're starting to get their permits through, and you don't get permits if you're still being used as that political football. So it's really positive steps for them going forwards to now get their full sets of permits, and eventually, you know, hopefully subject to the completion of a definitive feasibility study, you know, bring this this excellent project and strategically located project into production.
Excellent stuff. And what percentage holding do you have of those?
We have 19.7% of European Metals Holdings.
Marvellous stuff. Okay, well, let's also talk about the lithium market generally, because it did take a bit of a knock, the lithium price, isn't it?
Yeah, well, that's an interesting thing that you say. You say the price has come down. Well, you know, that's a perception of one price point. So, you know, the lithium market's diverse, and it's got many, many places where it's sold. And the lithium price, when people talk it came down, is in China. And that's because what happened in China is it's a very small portion of the market internally. And in addition, you know, it reached highs of like $25,000 per ton. And then in addition, early this year, when some of the lithium producers in China, particularly the salt flats in Qinghai province, and some of the and some other sort of converters, those that convert spodumene to lithium carbonate, produce sub battery grade lithium carbonate, and therefore they had to sell it. And they sold it at whatever price they could get. And that really affected the market locally. But what we look at, which is really the long-term pricing, is prices out of South America, where sort of about 50% of lithium carbonate is produced, and North America. So those pricing has actually increased during the period of the year. So it's gone from $14,000 to around $15,000 a ton, and it's sitting around $15,000 a ton. So the reality is that although a very small proportion of the market, which doesn't really represent where the majority of the production is coming from, has dropped, the rest of the market and the majority of the rest of the market in terms of sale prices has increased. So the lithium price really hasn't gone down as a whole. But people have read into that and also looked at, you know, several reports where they talk about a wave of supply coming along. And, you know, the lithium market as a whole is down, some of the majors like SQM and Albemarle are down 20 to 40%. And that's on the basis of, you know, these are profitable multi-billion dollar companies, while you have some of the more junior companies down 60 to 65%. So as a whole, the lithium market and the equity story has come down, but the fundamentals are still there. And so there's some great opportunities out there.
Yeah, okay, excellent stuff. That explains it. It's quite complex, isn't it, that market there?
But, it is, but when you look at it, you know, when you look at the pricing of equity, the pricing of investments, is you say, well, okay, what are the drivers behind it? And if there's a flawed driver behind it or a misunderstanding of the market, then, you know, there's some mispricing within the equity markets as well. So, you know, there are opportunities for people who have got balance sheets to take a great advantage of this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. And finally, of course, you announced your interim results for the 6 months ended 30th of June last week. So any more highlights from those, Kieran?
Well, Well, I think one of my major points was, you know, highlighting in the strategic review, you know, the performance of lithium markets, and in a bit more lengthy process, discussing why, you know, prices have gone down. I mean, you know, from our side, it has been disappointing, you know, as a result of those lithium prices coming down, the lithium prices of equities coming down. Mm-hmm. We've seen a drop in our mark-to-market value, you know, where we were at the end of last year, worth about £24 million or £25 million, by middle of this year is about £14 million. And our absolute return has gone from about 119% to 26%. So we've outperformed on the upside the global ex lithium battery tech returns, and we're just below, on the downside, we're just below them. So we're about 26% absolute return while they are 27. I mean, there's no, you know, when we look at our projects and we look at how they've progressed, they've all progressed well. You know, we're seeing improvements in European Metals Holdings and sort of fundamental. We've got investments elsewhere in Auroch Minerals, which is going to gold and nickel and lithium in Western Australia. So overall, we've had, on a fundamental basis, the projects have progressed well. But some have been affected by this cooling off of the lithium market, and that's particularly Bacanora. You know, has an excellent project with an excellent NPVs, but unfortunately, because of the what they call the volatility in the lithium in the markets, they were really unable to, or they pulled their equity raising in July this year. So that had a negative effect on their pricing. But fundamentally, these are great projects which have really good NPVs. They're advanced enough going to BFS to go through to construction, and they do form and will form part of the battery supply chain. I think of note is, you know, we're an investment company, so we do have to adjust our costs depending on our performance, and we have done so. You know, over this, you know, year on year, we've effectively dropped our cash burn quite considerably, so that, you know, at the end of last year, you know, our administrative expenses were about £1.1 million, or the period ending June 2017. The same period this year, we've dropped that down to about £800,000 with an actual cash burn of £400,000. So, and that's including, you know, cutting our salaries and cutting our administrative costs, you know, based on our, you know, the NAV valuation of the company. So although it's been a disappointing period for us in terms of the interims, overall, fundamentally, these projects are progressing well. EMH more so now. It's, you know, got over this hurdle of being used as political football, I feel. And that's very positive outlook. And in addition, we've got these other projects which we feel will come to fruition over the next six to 12 months. So this is, and the lithium market, one hopes, will improve, and people realise that there isn't a wave of supply. The price hasn't gone down, and we'll see an improvement across the board again within the lithium market. Because after all, if we're really going to adopt EVs, and all the, you know, there's a really good indicator. Here's the indicator. There are these things called mega factories. You know, there's almost been a 10x increase in the commitment or planned mega factories, of these factories that produce loads and loads of batteries, between 2017 and 2028. So the forecast amount between how many factories are going to be producing batteries in terms of volume of gigawatt hours is a 10x improvement planned or slated for production. So, you know, you're going to have to find something to fill that gap. And at the moment, you know, there's still, in our view, are going to be a shortage of lithium compounds to fill that.
Excellent stuff. Well, Kieran, to summarise, if someone's listening right now, likes the area you're exposed to, but are not following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, if you want to, you know, three simple reasons are, if you want to understand and you want to be exposed to the lithium market as a whole, and, you know, we've been investing in the market since 2014, and understand it in a very fundamental basis with boots on the ground. So we are exposed to that lithium market through equity, through private holdings, and it would be, if you want to understand that, follow us through for that reason, and also also, particularly at this moment, follow us on the basis that actually, as I've talked beforehand, there's some mispricing out there. So there could be some opportunities to be exposed to some, underpriced assets along the way. And lastly, you know, apart from the mispricing in the lithium market, we've got an excellent set of assets, both in Bacanora and European Metals Holdings, which we certainly believe will form part of the lithium supply chain going forward.
Marvellous stuff. Kieran, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll be catching up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Emma Priestley, Chief Executive Officer of Goldstone Resources. GRL is the ticker there. Emma, thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Justin. How are you?
I'm good. And you're actually in Ghana at the moment, is that right?
I am in Ghana, yes.
It's excellent, and apparently part of the, we had a bit of technical issue with the rain, because it's a bit of the rainy season, but you're in a dry place right now and good to go, yeah?
In a dry place at the moment, yes, but we are in the thick of the rainy season, which hopefully will end in November.
So, excellent.
We look forward to it.
Yeah, okay, well, you've had some news out, you've had your interims, and you've also had an operation update, so we'll just touch on those in a bit. Before we do, Emma, for people listening right now not familiar with Goldstone Resources, can you summarise in a minute or less what it's all about, please?
Can indeed. We're Goldstone, we're listed on AIM, and we are focused on our two projects that we've got in Ghana. And what it is we have two licenses, the Hamasi and the Akeri. On both licenses, there were two former historic mines. Akeri was abandoned 100 years ago, and it is the company's objective to reopen that mine. And on the Hamasi, there was a former open pit that was operational in 2002-2003. And on that, we are looking to extend a long trend, as we've made the announcements in previous announcements this year. In a nutshell, we are looking to be a developing company.
Yeah.
We are a developing company.
Absolutely. And so, at the moment, what is your lead focus here?
The lead focus is the two. We've got two really exciting projects that we're working in parallel here.
Okay.
And the licenses are contiguous. So the mineralization. And see, don't forget, we are 12 kilometers town for town from Obuasi, okay, which is one of the largest. It's certainly the largest gold mine in Western Africa. And Obuasi sat there with 36 million ounces in situ. We certainly believe that we are along the same mineralized trend. There's plenty of geologists who've studied the area, mm-hmm. and our deposits are very similar.
Yeah. So, as far as you're aware now, so what do you know? I mean, what kind of workings have you done? What do you know about these mines, and where are you, operationally?
Well, where are we? Operationally in Akeri, which was the mine abandoned 100 years ago, we are trying to locate the collar of the old shaft. There were two shafts, North Shaft, South Shaft. First shaft we're not looking at the moment. North Shaft was the most accessible because we are on the edge of a town, and with the rainy season, it's not making life easy. But where we are, we're about 16 meters down in the ground, and we are finding the old timber and the old pipes sticking up, so we know we are close to the old collar. Whilst we're there, you've got to remember this area has had 100 years of unmanaged mining activities. So that is your Galum Sea or your artisanal mining, as people call it. And what we have done this last few weeks is we have accessed two Galum Sea shafts when we have gone down into shallow workings. And what we did discover whilst we were in there, and this is from surface down to, 100 feet, so we're talking down about 30 metres, and we have discovered an old drift that the old timers, that is the old miners, put in. And you can tell that we did publish a photograph, and there are some more photographs will be up on our web page shortly, that shows that they were obviously drifting, and they were following the vein. We can see the vein clearly. And obviously what we want to do now is work hard to reopen the old shaft, North Shaft, so that we can get a pump in there, dewater it and get down and assess the situation.
Yeah, and there's, I suppose, a number of advantages, aren't there, to working old mines? And you're probably better off pointing those out than me, actually.
Well, the key thing with this one is that it was in operation for 6 years, and they produced 75,000 ounces at an average grade of 24 grams a ton recovered. Mm-hmm. Now, I've read the reports, and I've actually been doing a lot of research, and this mine closed due to an inrush of water. But there was also a lot of miners' strikes going on at that time, not just at Akrakeri. I've read there was miners' strikes going on at Obuasi and Nongo and all around the region, all over pay. Mm-hmm. And miners can be naughty, and you have a strike, and then next minute there's an inrush of water. So, and I have actually experienced that water. I can say I was down in the Galamsey workings this last week, and the water seeping through the ground, it comes in fast during the rainy season. So, yeah, we've got pumps pumping that water out.
Okay, so a very high grade, yeah. Hopefully. And so give us a timeline of when do you hope to, you know, when do you hope to be operationally, when do you hope to be mining this? what's the next steps?
Like, it's operational in the next few weeks. Yeah. No, next steps. We've got a lot of work to do to gain access, assess it. We've then got to obviously map it. We'll be doing some exploration and obviously making sure everything's safe. Mm-hmm. And as we've always said, within 2 years, we've set ourselves the target. But we have an old mine there. We know there's the ounces of gold down there, and that's what we want to access.
Yeah, yeah. And so what's the next major milestone then, Emma? Hopefully.
Well, the next major milestone will be with our other project, although it is it's only a couple of kilometres up the mineralised trend, which is we are continuing with the scoping study. We announced to the market a few months ago we've got the 8 kilometre trend, the Hamati trend, as we've now called it. And within this, AngloGold Ashanti had a small pit there in 2002, 2003. And we are looking at the feasibility of a second pit downstrike from that pit. And that is what we are working on at the moment. So in the coming weeks, we hope to be reporting on that.
Marvellous stuff. Okay. Well, Emma, if someone's listening to this, likes the sound of this, but not yet following the story, then give them those three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button and add you to their watch list, please.
Add them to. Well, the key thing with us is our shareholders. We have two significant shareholders, which are Parakali Gold, who are gold investors, and the chairman, Goldstone's chairman, Bill True. He chairs Parakali, and he also chairs an engineering business, MAD, and of course they are assisting us with engineers on site. So it is the board. Our second largest shareholder is BCM, who are one of the leading mining contractors in West Africa, and they are obviously also represented on the board and fully supportive of the company's plans to actually get Goldstone developing and into a mining company. And third reason really is our postcode. Look where we are. You know, we are next door to Obuasi, 12 kilometres up strike, and we're in a very good postcode.
Marvellous stuff. Excellent. Emma, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll be chatting again in the not too distant future. Thanks a lot.
I hope so too, Justin. Thank you very much indeed.
Okay, the top five most followed companies are as follows. At five, Expediator, XPD, ticker there. At four, Ananda Development, or ANA is ticker there. At three, Rose Petroleum, ROSE. At two, Petrol Resources, PET. And number one, most followed company, up strongly today, Clontarf Energy, CLON. Okay, time for the top five most liked RNSs. That was a pause there, deliberate one. You probably recognize that. I don't know what I'm talking about, to be honest. At five, ARC Minerals Limited, 2 million equity fundraising. At four, Europa Metals, annual financial report. At three, Greatland Gold, Havieran project drilling update. At two, Europa Metals, annual resource and reserve statement. And number one, most liked RNS came from Ascent Resources, an operational update. That's AST ticker, of course, there. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.